This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Clock says 11:10. So let me refer to you an African wealth report, okay? But first, maybe the report that came through from Henley and Partners, which says that on the African continent as we speak, there are 135,200 individuals technically declared or described as dollar millionaires. Okay, these are people who have a net worth or earn upwards of $1 million. Dollars. Okay, so in rands, just times that by 19. So if you've got close on to 20 million rands, we're talking about you. You and above. That's the baseline. Now, the number of these dollar millionaires has declined by 8% in the last decade. That's according to Henley and Partners. And the five nations that account for the greatest concentration of the wealth are South Africa, obviously the most industrialized economy, Egypt, Nigeria, Kenya, and Morocco. So the regional hegemons in North, South, East, and West Africa. And collectively, these big five account for 56% of Africa's high net worth individuals. And they also account for 90% of all the billionaires that we talk about on the African continent. The trouble is this. Many of them are choosing to leave the continent. Not only is the number declining, because the value of wealth in African economies is declining, countries are getting more indebted, but those with it are choosing to go and live elsewhere. So you'd ask yourself, so what? Let them go. Well, no, actually, because these are business owners of big industries in these countries. But also that pool of capital, we're told, when all of these 135,000 millionaires are put together, they bring in about $2.5 trillion, money that can be tapped into for reinvestment in the economy and for solving many social problems, because wealthy Africans are also big philanthropists who build clinics where there are no clinics, or set up bursary funds where there is a crisis in education, you know, or bring big cultural and sporting festivals, which then generate capital and stimulate the tourism economy. So there's a lot of positive impact and spin-offs when the money stays concentrated on the continent, but it is not. And now the latest Africa Wealth Report shows that South Africa continues to lose its millionaires, with 400 wealthy individuals just calling it quits on the country, opting to go and live elsewhere, and sometimes taking what they earn, and once it's converted into foreign currency, they even lose their millionaire status once they convert their rands into pounds or whatever. But it's even a risk they're willing to take to go and live elsewhere. And so the question is, why? Andrew Amoyles, am I said it correctly, is the head of research at New World Wealth, and he joins us now. Did I say your last name correctly?
Yes, that's perfect.
Amoyles.
Yes.
Okay. Andrew, thanks for coming through. Okay, so we've got millionaires, and we certainly had more and more millionaires in recent history. One, the number is declining, and two, those who have it want to leave.
Well, yeah, it's a problem in a lot of emerging markets. I mean, if you looked, actually an interesting stat that we didn't mention in the report, but only came out in an interview I did recently with TRT in Turkey, was something about, they asked about what was the previous growth rate the previous decade. Mm. So we're looking at the decade from 2013 to 2023, and the number of US dollar millionaires in Africa has declined by 8%. Mm. So they were asking what happened the previous decade. And the previous decade, they were actually up by 80%. So it just shows that there was really strong growth. And even the previous decade before that, which we didn't look at, would have probably also had strong growth. But I think the reason that a lot of the emerging markets slowed down is what happened is a lot of the developed markets sort of, I think, started to see the danger in emerging markets like China. Mm. And they've kind of started to clamp down on imports from a lot of emerging markets, which has kind of sabotaged us. And the bigger problem is also a lot of wealthy people have left. So, for instance, if you look at the United States, they pretty much dominate the tech scene completely. Even Europe has completely missed out on all the tech. Mm. Like all the tech companies you use are generally based, and they're generally all based in Silicon Valley. Yeah. So a lot of people have just ended up having to move there to basically work for those companies.
There's a lot of things you've said. Okay, so let's start off with the fact that before 2013, the number of people who became millionaires in Africa grew by 80%, did you say?
Yeah, the decade from around 2000 to 2013, or 2003 to 2013, there was about 80% growth, yes.
So there was more people became wealthy.
Yes, in Africa.
In Africa. And then after 2013, not so many people became wealthy. So it kind of plateaus. And now we're seeing a dip. So it's now not just an average. It's now there's even fewer and fewer and fewer. That number's declining.
Yes. And well, a lot of it, if you look at it on a country level, a lot of it's been caused by the fact that South Africa, Egypt, and Nigeria have had declines. Like Nigeria, the number of US dollar millionaires there has halved in the last decade. So they've had a really bad decade. The decade before that for them was pretty good. They've obviously had a lot of issues, political issues and all types of things. But a lot of wealthy people have left. But the bigger problem there is just their currency's gone down about 80% versus the dollar.
Okay, so before 2013, there was the commodity super cycle. Price of oil high, price of gold high, price of platinum high. And these are heavy resource-rich nations. So once there's a shift in that resource economy, the commodity cycle, it has a direct impact, even on the wealth of these individuals. And then once you factor in politics, like you're saying in Nigeria, for a long time, there was a lot of protectionism. The currency collapsed by over 300%. There have been dollar shortages. So trade has been very difficult in Nigeria. It then dips the numbers even further.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, China's grappling with it now in terms of wealthy people leaving. We estimate around 15,000 millionaires left China just last year. So, they've got a lot of millionaires, but they don't have nearly as many as people think. Mm. I think if you just look at it in terms of liquid investable wealth, the United States has about 8 times as many US dollar millionaires as China. So although China, the GDP numbers in China are very similar to the United States, when it comes to wealth, liquid wealth and millionaire numbers, they're way behind.
Okay, and so, and also the difference between liquid wealth and asset wealth is, it's one thing to say I've got shares in a company. When you say liquid wealth, you mean somebody who can turn $1 million in cash right now.
It's including shares, but only in listed companies.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, a lot of people have private company holdings. They own a company, and lots of companies, and even radio stations, and then. That doesn't mean that they can just cash in on that money at any moment. Only if you've got money in a stock market, a liquid stock market, or cash holdings.
Which can sell now.
And we also include, as part of liquid investable wealth, debt-free residential property. So if it's residential, but it's debt-free. Because one of the biggest problems with residential is when people start including residential property as part of someone's wealth, the problem is, do they own it? Do they own it debt-free?
Yeah.
And that's a big factor. So a lot of that is excluded, the residential holdings.
Now, why is it important, do you think, that we're having this conversation that we need to look at these numbers? Because some people say, boo-hoo. So you're not a millionaire anymore, or you're not as rich as you once were, but you've still got money. You don't have money problems. Why are we even discussing this?
Well, it's a barometer. So essentially that 8% decline in the US dollar millionaires that's happened in Africa over the last decade, the drop in US dollar wealth in Africa has been very similar to that. And the drop in middle class numbers has been very similar. So they're all linked. The billionaires move a bit differently because there's so few of them. There's only 21 billionaires living in Africa. So those numbers can jump. But when you're talking about a number as big as 135,000, that will tend to move at a very similar growth rate to the overall growth rate. Mm. So the only reason we don't look at total wealth and we focus a lot on millionaires is because it tends to be what people want in terms of media. We used to actually focus a report on total wealth. We used to say this is the total wealth in each African country in dollar terms, and this is how it's grown. But we found that for PR and media purposes, the report did better if we focused on millionaires.
What do you mean by total wealth? Help us understand that concept.
So the total liquid investable wealth held in each African country. And then we looked at wealth.
So it doesn't necessarily concern millionaires?
No, it would include everyone.
Okay.
Yeah, and so those numbers tend to grow at very similar rates to the millionaires. So when we say that the number of US dollar millionaires in Africa is down by 8%, the US dollar wealth held in Africa will also be down by about between 5 and 10% over the last decade.
Okay. So a few consequences here. One of them is if fewer people have liquid dollar wealth, shall we call it that? It starts to impact the currency, the savings, the war chest of a nation. Explain why that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another spillover effect, 100%. If there isn't a lot of wealthy people, first of all, they won't be able to get a lot of tax revenue because there's a lot of taxes that basically only the wealthy people pay, like things like capital gains tax. So if you don't have them, you're not going to be collect much of those types of taxes. You'll still be able to collect sales tax and VAT, but the income tax and the capital gains will be heavily damaged in terms of the intake. So that will obviously push the government either to decrease spending or to borrow money. And then obviously their debt can get to a point that it's very high.
Yeah.
And then eventually these government bodies might start to say that the country's insolvent. South Africa's nowhere near that point, but that would always be the danger.
Okay, so tax collection, revenue collection, feeding into the fiscus, budgeting, we're already starting to feel a little bit of it as well in South Africa, given how Enoch Godongwana has been quite transparent about the fact that there isn't enough money to go around. And those extra pools of cash can't be tapped into because not that many people have it at the moment. Okay, so that's the first thing you're explaining to us. Obviously, the links with the currency. And what about investment? Do wealthy people invest their money or do they spend it?
Yeah, absolutely. They invest it. I mean, there's a number of... we actually did a report on why wealth migration matters because we work with Henley & Partners that basically is a migration wealth advisory. And we do another report called the Wealth Migration Report, which is a global report. And we look at all the millionaire flows from all the countries globally. Mm. And we did a study last year about why it matters. And there's a huge number of reasons. I think when millionaires leave, for instance, they obviously take their money with them. So that has a damaging effect on the banking system because they're obviously moving it from a South African bank overseas. So that would have a job impact. There's the tax impact that we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a lot of industries that are almost completely reliant on high net worths. For instance, luxury restaurants, top-end hotels, a lot of the top-end safari lodges, wealth management sector. There's a huge, there's millions of jobs in those sectors. So if there's no wealthy people, those sectors would fall away. So it has a massive amount. Plus, of course, a lot of them, especially the wealthier high net worths, what we call the centi millionaires, the ones with over 100 million US dollars, which is about 2 billion rand, they would normally be business owners. So if they left, that they would probably move a business as a result of leaving. So that would have a negative impact as well.
We once had a conversation on Power Talk about philanthropy and that if you pool the resources of high net worth individuals in Africa, you could start to augment on the FDI side. So even if big companies, multinationals say, oh, I don't really think I want to invest, this money in circulation is money that can be tapped into for big projects. So this decline then starts to have an impact on that kind of philanthropic side of the economy.
Absolutely. I think the one danger with the philanthropic, those types of studies, and I've seen them a lot in newspapers like The Guardian in the UK, for instance. Yeah. I think there was always an assumption over time that these countries that have very low taxes, like Dubai, Mauritius, would eventually fall away. That hasn't happened. So I think all this stuff about, oh, we can kind of augment, take away people's, it's not, it won't work unless you get rid of those countries. Because once you've got the alternative, then it, you know, that is an issue. But in terms of philanthropy, yeah, 100%. I mean, it would have a negative impact on that. A lot of philanthropy that comes into Africa is from foreigners.
Yeah.
So it's not all from local people anyway.
So rich people don't really do the sanctimonious self-righteous thing.
I mean, we've never actually done a proper study on philanthropy. Right. The last stats I've seen, I think most of the money that comes into African philanthropy is not from people in Africa. Okay. So it's that's probably a whole separate thing, I guess.
Yeah, I've read that if we pooled the wealth of millionaires in Africa, we could be looking at, well, they say 2.5 trillion. Your study says 2.5 trillion, but other studies say upwards of 25 trillion, which can be tapped into for big major investments if used correctly. But the number's dwindling now. So let's go away. Let's move away from rich people and their problems. I don't know about you, but that's not nobody in this room. This report is not talking about anybody in this room at the moment. But it does, as you say, it is a barometer of the state of affairs in general. And many people who traditionally were classified middle class, in other words, you know, that moved from just being in the working class to buying a bigger house, to having their kids in good schools, one car, a couple of TVs in the home, those people are seeing their hard-earned money shrinking in value. And we're all feeling it, whatever your station in life. When you go to the shops, what 100 rands used to buy you is not what 100 rands buys you today. What we used to pay in rates and taxes, utilities, bills, almost doubled today. So people are not earning higher salaries, and yet the economy is demanding them to pay in much, much more. And this is not a rich man's problem. This is a whole social problem. What is the end game, do you think, here?
No, I think that's a major factor. And I think the thing with the middle class, we define middle class, I think it's important that we say how we define it, as someone with over $200,000 in holdings, which doesn't sound a lot in US dollars, but you work it out in Rand, that's 4 million Rand in liquid investable wealth. So that sounds like that person is quite
wealthy.
That's
the middle class.
That's the middle class. That's the global definition of what middle class is. Because I think some people think
a
middle
world
class.
The World Bank definition is like, do you have a car, a TV, a three-bedroomed house, middle class?
Some people do define it based on that type of thing. but I think the general way is either it used to be 100,000 US dollars in assets. Then some people said it was 300,000. That's quite high. But we say it's about 200,000 dollars. So that's 4 million rand. So they're already, middle class is actually a higher band than I think people realize. But also,
you see how my mouth is gasping?
Yeah.
So then none of us here are middle class. I don't know about you, but I don't have 4 million just to tap into.
Either in cash holdings, including a residential, debt-free residential, and look, I'm not analyzing anyone's wealth, but yeah.
This is fascinating.
But the point, I think sometimes, because people say, what is, you know, they talk about it like it's this random term that it's people that are not.
It's working people. People going to work every day, earning a salary and can put food on the table,
I think
middle class.
People think, middle class is just people that, have food.
Yeah.
But that's not how, certainly not how anyone in the wealth sector defines it. But I think one of the things with the middle class, though, is they are very susceptible to problems. Like, for instance, if someone's got $100 million, chances are they've got a very diversified portfolio. Yeah. They got money in the S&P 500 in America. They got money in property in Europe, property here. Whereas a middle class person with that $200,000, they might just have all their money in a property or all their money in maybe cash or all their money in the JSE.
Yeah.
Now, if something goes wrong in any of those things, they can be completely wiped out. And that they are way more susceptible to kind of problems. So, for instance, that 8% drop in the millionaire numbers, the middle class dropped, I think, slightly more. It dropped by about 10-12% because they're more susceptible to problems than the millionaires.
My gosh, revelations today. So as we wind down this conversation, Andrew Emmels, why is it important? Just help us understand. Why is it important for our country in the emerging markets, developing, to have a strong middle class and even that upper 1% to 2% band of millionaires? Why does it matter? Because there's no country that's ever grown, certainly from my limited understanding, without them.
No.
The intelligentsia matter, the wealthy matter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the United States, this is the best case study. They've obviously got about 800 billionaires. I mean, the whole of Africa's only got 21 billionaires. So the United States is totally, and a lot of people say, oh, it's a very unequal society. But the thing is, in order to have a huge middle class, you've probably got to have a huge amount of billionaires because you've got to have all those big companies based mm-hmm. there in order for those millionaires that work. A lot of the people, even in junior positions working for organizations like Microsoft and Google, are middle class.
Yeah, they earn good perks.
They would all be considered middle class. So, unless they maybe had just started there or something. Mm-hmm. It's huge amounts of middle-class people that are created by those companies, and that means the billionaires are living there, whereas there's only 21 billionaires living in Africa. So they're the ones
countries.
And if you look at those 21 billionaires, they're the ones that control or started most of the really big companies in Africa. So the fact that there's so few, it's a factor. And obviously when you go to the lower bands like the millionaires, it's an even bigger factor because there's even more of them.
Okay, so have I understood you correctly? So the billionaires, by and large, how they become billionaires is because they own big industries, which employs tens of thousands of people. Amongst those employees, millionaires emerge because they become executives in companies, they earn perks, etc., etc. And then it becomes the multiplier because then they reinvest the money in stock exchanges different ways, and then other industries mushroom. And so cyclically, as that money keeps on moving in the system, we create more and more millionaires, but they need to stay in country so that the wealth is not repatriated.
Yeah, that's key. They've got to stay, and also they've got to preferably invest in the country, so not be investing out overseas. So that's preferable, but it's very difficult to force them to do that. There are a lot of countries that have tried to force people to invest their wealth locally. The problem with that is you're kind of creating a situation where they might leave completely.
Okay. And sorry, just one last question, and we've run out of time. We spoke about the big five African economies and what's happening there. What about the high growth countries, the Zambias, the Kenyas, the Ugandas? They may not have that concentration of wealth, but they're coming up on the GDP side, consistently just performing well each year economically.
Yeah. Well, Zambia, we got strong forecasts for, but they haven't performed that well recently. The ones that have really performed well the last decade has been Mauritius, Rwanda, Morocco, Namibia's done well. Mauritius, Rwanda, Morocco, Namibia, they've been the standouts. But going forward, we think Zambia's going to do very well as well. And those four countries, again, we're expecting strong growth. But we actually have quite strong growth forecast for South Africa. We think South African millionaire numbers are going to grow by about 60% over the next decade.
Sure. Andrew, you have to come back. I can already see this is generating a conversation online, especially that bit about the middle class. I think a lot of us are like, oh, I'm just going to sit home and lick my wounds. Andrew Emmels, Head of Research at New World Wealth. Thank you for your time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.